Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the front lines in the battle for freedom and liberty, Olympia, Washington, a very rainy Olympia, Washington, actually worse than normal, which is saying something over here. Brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about our hope being not in man, but in Jesus Christ, and that we can't end in prayer, we must also move to action. And as Ephesians 2, 5 through 6 says, God made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. A little provocative, but liberty exists in America today. Well, it looks like we're back on the air, at least I hope so anyway. So, as I was saying, it's been raining quite a bit over here in Olympia, and the storm, actually, one of the storms yesterday was one of the worst I'd ever seen with the amount of rain pouring down here, and I think it might be having a little bit of effect on the internet. I don't know. Anyways, either way, I was going to say, you know, I want to kind of say something provocative. A lot of God haters out there, people that just hate God, they cannot stand the mention of the word Christian, Jesus Christ, anything like that. And obviously, those of us who are believers know where that's coming from. But what I would say is that even if they believe what they believe, God is a gentleman. God is not going to force somebody to choose him. In fact, the existence of choice is true love. And I hope everybody understands. That's a very profound statement, actually. And the idea that America could exist, liberty could exist, without Judeo-Christian principles is just ridiculous. In fact, the Chinese, the atheist communist Chinese, admitted, and this was cataloged in a book called Jesus in Beijing by David Aikman. I believe it was pages 15 and 16. Anyway, in that book, David Aikman talks about how they went to the premier Chinese university in Beijing and how they were given a presentation. And during that presentation, the upshot of it was that the reason America is great, the Chinese did the research on it, was not because of our technology, was not because of our military, our economy, our political system. It was because of our religion, Christianity, because it allowed for capitalism and it allowed for freedom. And I'm really sick and tired of people out there that if you say that, that's somehow creating a theocracy. They don't even understand what the word theocracy means. It comes from the Greek theokratios, which means God rule. And it was originated in the 17th century to describe a government that was run by a quote-unquote deity or religious authorities. Examples in the modern realm of this are North Korea, for example, where Kim Jong-un is a deity in that country. He's worshipped in that country. Or Iran, where literally the Ayatollah's religious authorities can trump anything, even though they have a parliament in Iran, can trump anything. That is a theocracy. And so if you're advocating for religious liberty, you can't ever be advocating for a theocracy. So anytime anybody tries to say that to you, just reject their premise up front because A, they don't know what they're talking about, and B, they're not very well read. In addition to that, and very interestingly, the Bible was the number one cited source by the founding fathers. And there are many examples of how our country was based on Judeo-Christian principles. People have tried to argue with this over the years, but you can just read a couple of books, or you can just look them up online. And you will see how not just the founding fathers, but the actual first people here to America from Europe believed that they were coming and basing things on a Judeo-Christian foundation. The first of these is obviously the Mayflower Compact. Most of you have read that. But there's also another interesting one. It's called the Body of Liberties. It's called the Massachusetts, properly, Massachusetts Body of Liberties. It was written in 1641. And as part of the law that was laid down at that time, they actually cited the Bible verse, which gave them the authority for the law that they had put into practice. So conclusive proof that those first folks that came to America believed in the Judeo-Christian foundation of what they were creating. And the other interesting one, and if a lot of people, and I'm telling you right now, a lot of people have not even heard of this. Many have heard of the Articles of Confederation that preceded the Constitution. And you have, probably many debates over where that originated, etc. But here's the interesting thing. Most people don't know, and you can look at this up at the Yale Law School Avalon Project. In fact, the Avalon Project is a great resource for primary source documents. If you ever need it, you can look it up. It's, again, the Yale Law School Avalon Project. But this is what that people have never heard of. Never. And this conclusively disproves all those people that say ridiculously ignorant things like America was not founded on Judeo-Christian principles. It was founded on natural law. Where did the term natural law come from? Where did that even come from? It actually came from what is known as classical synthesis, that God wrote his truth on creation. That if you've read in Scripture, that creation testifies to the existence of God. That's where that came from. So A, they're totally wrong in trying to divorce the two. Secondly, they miss things like this. The Articles of Confederation of the United Colonies of New England. This was written May 19th, 1643, and here is the first line from it, okay? And these are all the, this is a confederation, an Articles of Confederation between the plantations that were created at that time under the government of Massachusetts, New Plymouth, Connecticut, and New Haven. Okay, here's the first line. Whereas we all come into these parts of America with one and the same end and aim, namely, to advance the kingdom of our Lord Jesus Christ and to enjoy the liberties of the gospel in purity with peace. And whereas in our settling, by wise providence of God, we are further dispersed upon the seacoasts and rivers than was at first intended, so that we cannot, according to our desire with convenience, communicate in one government and jurisdiction. Understand what that just said. To enjoy the liberties of the gospel. And that they were basing that purpose of advancing the kingdom of Jesus Christ as the sole basis for determining their jurisdictions and government. Understand what this document means. This conclusively disproves the left. Conclusively. No, and everybody that says, oh, I'm not on the left, and then yet spouts off stuff like, we're not based on Judeo-Christian principles, we're based on natural law. Okay? So, again, the Articles of Confederation of the United Colonies of New England. You can also, as one listener just texted me, take a look at the Founders Bible and take a look at all of the instances. It just is beyond dispute. If you actually read the primary source documents and don't read a book about the primary source documents, but actually read the primary source documents, go and look at the ratifying conventions and the debates that were cataloged, there is no question whatsoever we're based on a Judeo-Christian principle. But at the same time, religious liberty was meant to protect the right of conscience and that right that I was talking about earlier to choose. God is a gentleman. So if there's going to be true love, there needs to be a choice. Only Christianity really truly protects that. And it actually separates itself intentionally into several spheres, the family, the church, government, because there needs to be not only the check in the system, but also each jurisdiction has responsibility to not just discipline in that jurisdiction, but to allow the gospel of Jesus Christ, the making of disciples, the love of God and the love of our neighbor to expand. Those are the purposes. And it becomes very, to me at least, it becomes very simple when you think about it like that and when you read the primary source document. It conclusively disproves anybody that says anything to the contrary. And I'm going to tell you something, too. There are people out there that they say, well, I'm not on the left. I don't believe on the left. And yet, they follow almost exactly the same patterns. Almost exactly. And they follow almost exactly the same tactics of social justice warriors. Social justice warriors, Vox Dei has a great book on that. And in his book, he talks about three principles. The first principle is social justice warriors always lie. Principle number two, social justice warriors always double down on the lie. Principle number three, social justice warriors always protect. And that's a quote from his book. And the principle behind that is that if you're watching somebody following the tactics of the left, they are just as good as the left. And they might as well be the left. And what is the left? Let's define that. In fact, I'm going to remove left-right monikers. You have people who believe that God is the creator of the universe and that God is the king. And then you have people, in whatever form they try to say this, people that believe the opposite, that man is the king. And ultimately what that is state worship. We're replacing God with an idol. And so it's very clear when you see in those paradigms of what is happening here in America today, and also inside our own circles, in what most people would say are conservative circles. But if you're using the tactics of the left, and you're confusing other people, and you're intentionally deceiving other people, and then when you're told the truth and you continue to lie about it, and continue to lie about it, and continue to lie about it, then you have to, if you're on our side, and it's better probably to say if you're on the side of truth, then you have to say, well, you're acting like the state worshipers, the left. You're acting like Antifa, because that's what they do. I mean, this is out of the Saul Alinsky playbook. I wanted to talk about that today because it's important to set the foundation for a lot of things we're going to be talking about on the show in Olympia. I'm going to bring up the 51st state. Had a great, great, great rally up in Colville. A ton of support coming out of that. We've ordered 51st state flags. So anybody that wants those, you can go on to libertystate.org. Just this movement is taking off. It's been amazing. Just so awesome. It has been such a unifying experience. I've seen people from all walks of life. Pastor Matthew Cummings gave the invocation. We had another great person I mentioned on this show before, Jordan Page, sing a song in there. There are many other people involved. Mike Berry, a sheriff candidate for Stevens County, was also there, along with the actual sheriff as well, Kendall Allen. And there were several, I think there was a couple county commissioners there, a lot of leaders. It was so unifying. And what happens when you have a lot of traction and a lot of unity and a lot of momentum, you will always be attacked. It's almost, it's predictable. In fact, some people actually predicted ahead of the event that we would be attacked. And sure enough, within 72 hours before the event, we were. It was really interesting because if you also read General Mihai Pachipa's book, Disinformation, you can glean from that book the tactics that are used. For example, taking information that was published a long time ago, bringing it forward as if it applies to today, or taking it out of context and trying to attribute it to other people who didn't even write it. favorite tactic of the KGB. General Pacheco lays it out in his book very, very well. And if you haven't read it, it's a phenomenal book. Helps you understand what's happening in America today. And that really there are only two camps. You've got the camps that are following the truth, and then you got the camp that is following what they think might be the truth, but they really have been blinded and deceived. So we always have to, have compassion on those folks and pray for them. But whether they know it or not, their ignorance, the fact that they think they are wise and they are not, the fact that they are trying to make wrong right and right wrong, that is what is destroying this country. Those are the sources of destruction. And, you know, I see it here in Olympia kind of in a starker contrast than many of you listening today, because we see it day in and day out. It's just, it is so stark. And these, some of these people are very well-meaning. They really are. They're very well-meaning. They are. But it is driving us in the wrong direction. And that brings us to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Out of the Middle East, the Palestinians essentially giving the United States an ultimatum, either part of Jerusalem or war, which is probably not going to work out really well for the Palestinians. One of the reasons probably behind the scenes Trump is working to take money away from them that has been foreign aid for a long time, finally talking about that. Giving foreign aid to our enemies is just ridiculous. On top of that, Iran trying to assert itself in the Middle East. And I've talked about the Israeli airstrikes in Syria, the fact that Russia foiled some drone attacks in the first true drone battle of modern times. But now an interesting twist. Remember I talked about the fact that the Palestinians were getting together with the Jordanians, and that really that relationship has now been solidified. So you now have a third bloc. You have first the Egyptians, the UAE, and Egypt. And then you have the bloc of the Palestinians and the Jordanians. And remember, the Jordanians are the Hashemite kingdom. They were the original stewards of Mecca and the Kaaba, and they were kicked out by the Saudi Arabians here a little over 100 years ago. Now, this second bloc or third bloc is in the mix against Iran and its proxies in Syria, Hezbollah and the Syrian government. And then on top of that, finally, Turkey weighs in. The Turkish army invaded northern Syria and attacked U.S.-backed Kurds, those Kurdish militias, withheld the invasion and stopped them. And I'm so surprised we're not really seeing this on the mainstream media. But essentially, the militias have held, the Kurdish militias have held the Turks in northern Syria at a standstill. And there are a couple towns that are really Afrin and Manjib. They are the two towns in northern Syria that the Turks were going after. So Russia is now stepping in to try to broker peace, but the Turks, obviously, seeing these three other blocks forming, are trying to assert their own power. And that brings, you know, many questions, as I've been talking about on the show before, many questions out of how this is all going to end. I am very shocked if you don't see a lot of this on the mainstream media. You just don't. And that brings us to North Korea. The head of the CIA hinting that there might be a preemptive strike. There is clearly a show of force still going on in the Pacific. The Olympics are starting here at the beginning of February. The Chinese have issued a directive to their army to prepare for a U.S. attack on North Korea. This is on top of the Chinese having this underground opiate trade to the United States. You got to kind of wonder if that's a strategic issue or not. Very interesting to me, anyway. But an unstable part of the world growing even more unstable. Now, I really can't believe anything would happen during the Olympics, but as happened last time in Sochi in Russia, you had things happen before and after the Olympics. So there might be a timing thing here, maybe right before, right after. We'll see. Also on the international front in Venezuela, article coming out by the Washington Post, quote, in Venezuela, money has stopped working, end quote. People are looting trash now because what they have learned is that the Bolivar bills down there in Venezuela are worth nothing. And that hyperinflation being so disorienting, the only thing that brings stability is physical objects. And as the article, I mean, this is the Washington Post, for goodness sake, says, quote, rule number one of surviving hyperinflation is simple, get rid of your money, end quote. What brought it there? Well, if you scroll down through the article, you don't really see. Well, what brought it there were socialist policies. And there was a video that went viral out of Venezuela, and the article mentions it, of Venezuelans literally running into a cow pasture to stone a calf to death to get a meal. Well, that's what happens with socialism. It's pretty simple. Money stops working. A great lesson. On the national front, this idea of a surrogate or a robot second self. You know, because obviously, if you've never seen the movie, the idea of, you know, having no more pain actually was brought up by a Microsoft executive that within 20 years we're going to have robot surrogates. So, you know, again, if you haven't watched this movie, go watch this movie. I mean, this is where things are headed, and now they're saying it publicly. General Motors confirming what I've been reporting on the show for a while, that automated vehicles are coming by 2020. You know, and that's in addition to the drone deliveries that will be happening as well. It's just, wow. I mean, it's moving so fast. I know I talked to a couple of people who are like, Matt, I'm overwhelmed. I can't keep up. I don't want to keep up. I can't keep up. It's overwhelming. What do I do? I mean, this is just too much. And you know what? You're right. It is. It is too much. It really is too much. Do want to talk about something that happened to a very, very good friend of mine. She finally came out and told her story. I couldn't say anything here for about a week. But my friend, and many of you know, Chris Ann Hall, going to be talking about it, I think, a little bit on a regular basis, but essentially, through a series of events, her husband, who is a missionary and a pastor, was heading to Haiti, and their sailboat loaded with humanitarian aid from Florida to Haiti had to take refuge in Cuba. And for a few tense hours, very tense hours, he was essentially trapped in Cuba. And her husband made it out, made it home, and praise God for that. But for those of you that know Chris Ann Hall, shoot her a little note. Just sending your thoughts and prayers her way. Really tense, really scary there for a second. And if, for those of you that don't understand how communist countries work, You can have any sort of an emergency, and while most countries are expected to abide by maritime law, which makes them take your vessel in when it's under distress, to leave, you have to pay a bunch of fees, right? Administrative fees for this or for that, right? And it takes a while for that to occur. It's not as cut and dry as some people might think. Also on the national front, and this coming from my good friend Gary Randall, who has a show here on ACN as well, has a blog, Faith and Freedom. 485 papers in 2017 alone refuting global warming alarmism. You know, so this idea that there's a consensus or there's no evidence or peer-reviewed papers or studies on the side of rational thought and the idea that the climate always changes and always will, kind of refuted by this. And if you get a chance, check it out, Faith and Freedom, his blog and also his show here on ACN. Also on the national front, some in Congress calling for a probe of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, I want to talk about an organization in Northeast Washington, okay, that many of you may not know about. The Southern Poverty Law Center is connected and actually has people that write for them in the area of not just Washington State, but in the area specifically of Northeast Washington. And they have these little organizations that pop up, seemingly again to get out the truth, but we all know how the SPLC does that. There's an organization and a Facebook page in Northeast Washington dedicated solely to going after Christian conservatives. In fact, they take the tack of saying that Christian conservatives are a racist hate cult, or some, you know, words to that effect. The interesting part about it is they tried to claim that over the weekend when we had a pastor and a reverend, actually, of African-American descent give the invocation. They still tried to claim it. And it's so funny to me that, again, going back to the social justice warrior principles, when you say, wait, that's a lie. That doesn't make any sense. And they say, no, that has to be true. And they double down on the lie, right? And anyway, one example of the Southern Poverty Law Center being in our own backyard. And if you see any organization associated with them or who quotes them, puts up one of their little hate watch things, whatever, you know immediately that organization and anyone associated with that organization has totally lost all credibility. So keep your eye out for that. A lot of people ask me, you know, how do you know and discern things? Well, that's one way to discern it. And these organizations are insidious. They really are. And they try to come across legitimate, like the SPLC does. But, I mean, the fruits are very clear. And I hope Congress does do an investigation of the SPLC. And I thank goodness it's already been kicked out of the DOD. It is not about poverty and definitely not really about the law either. Also on the national front, a very interesting development. This is an exclusive from InfoWars online. And, you know, there's some people that knock InfoWars, but these guys keep getting the primary sources out. They today got the FISA memo. It was leaked to them. And the FISA memo literally lays out, and this is the long story short, how President Obama used the NSA, et cetera, to spy on Donald Trump. You heard that right. It lays out how the deep state spied on Donald Trump. And they have confirmed it. InfoWars is, some people in the mainstream media try to say it wasn't real, but they have confirmed it with congressional sources as a primary source document. Wow. This is what people have been saying is going to be jaw-dropping and earth-shattering. Some are alleging that this clearly reveals perjury by the Obama administration. It is a basic compendium of NSA abuses spotlighted. In other words, innocent Americans Understand what I just said. Innocent Americans were either unmasked, had their person identifiers put forward, and had their information acquired. Unbelievable. In fact, page 33, I want to read this to you. Quote, information acquired by FISA electronic surveillance and physical search, which often involve targets who are United States persons and typically are directed at persons in the United States, end quote. So these people that said, oh, it's a conspiracy theory that this mass surveillance is happening, conclusively disproven today. Infowars.com. Check them out and check out this FISA memo that was leaked. This is unbelievable. Also on the national front, when I talk about the FISA and mass surveillance program, it was reauthorized last week. Reauthorized without any reform, despite some people in Congress knowing the existence of this memorandum. Now, if somebody walked into your house today, walked up to your file cabinet, started rifling through your papers, and you came home and you caught them, what would you think? A burglar's in my house. What are you doing? How is it any different than your electronic files? That was the whole point behind the Fourth Amendment. That we were protected from unreasonable searches and seizures, that could only be done where there was a warrant that specified the things, place, and manner in which things were going to be searched. And you have them doing it on a national, a global scale. And Congress votes to reauthorize FISA and mass surveillance with no reform. And they knew about this. You cannot tell me they didn't know about this. Everybody knows. Everybody's talking about it. So that begs a couple questions, doesn't it? And I think for us, when I talk about being eternally vigilant, we have to turn around our idea of what it means to be an American. That, you know, I'm not going to trade safety for liberty. And the guy that created this initially, there's actually a movie called The Good American on Netflix. Watch it if you get a chance. The guy that originally created this entire system actually put checks in the system so American citizens could not be surveilled. And those were intentionally removed. It's unreal to me. And then the allegations, too, that foreign governments are allowed to spy on Americans, and then they would just trade the information with the American intelligence agencies because American intelligence agencies were spying on their citizens, like Great Britain and the United States, as France alleged in the Echelon program. Wow. And you know, some folks say this is not a big deal. It is a huge deal. You can still use some of this technology to go after the jihadi networks that are trying to do terrorist attacks in the United States, but you don't have to go after innocent Americans. In fact, and when people say, well, it's too bothersome to do that, look, the Constitution was written in an emergency for emergencies. There's no question about that, and it can't be abrogated because of emergency. That's the whole reason it's there. Which brings us to Session and the regional front. I want to talk about a couple things. First of all, Thursday, 1:30, House Hearing Room A, Judiciary Committee is going to be hearing all of the gun bills. Okay? House Hearing Room A, 1:30 on Thursday in Olympia, Washington, they're going to be hearing all of the gun control bills. Need to make your voice heard. And what do I mean by gun control bills? the magazine ban, the concealed carry ban, and it's House Bill 2738, for those of you who haven't read it, essentially requires express permission from every private property owner for you to carry on that property. So you need to carry around a bag, a binder. What, I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all. It's essentially trying to ban concealed carry in Washington State, make it so difficult. Which gets us to the simple words of the Washington State Constitution. Article 1, Section 24, the right to bear arms shall not be impaired. Impaired means what it says. That's it. Done. I think that of all of the rights that are out there that are protected or supposed to be protected by government, that one given to us by God is almost as important as the freedom of conscience, the right of conscience. Because without it, tyranny can reign and all the other rights are taken away, or at least trampled on, because truly they're never taken away because they're from God. In addition to the magazine bans and the concealed carry ban, you've got the so-called assault weapons ban. And, you know, I keep looking at this stuff, and I really wonder where these people are coming from. I really try to understand where they're coming from. But again, just like with the bump stock ban that's also going to be heard, the trigger modification ban, which, by the way, is written in such a way to essentially ban all trigger modifications. So if you put a better trigger on your rifle, it would fall under that. How is that even enforceable? I don't know. But the bottom line is that you, me, we have to defend the right to bear arms against these assaults, because one little inch is going to turn into a mile. And one more bureaucrat, one more permit, one more law is not going to stop bad people. It's just not. Armed, good people that are trained. So what stops bad people? Yesterday, too, I want to talk about the March for Life. Again, it was raining horribly hard yesterday. And I think there were well over 5,000 people on the Capitol steps. And you have this interesting dynamic where the media says there were hundreds. So it's my pleasure to introduce my guest today, Representative David Taylor. It was great seeing that many people out on the Capitol steps, I thought, at least.
Oh, absolutely. And my apologies, better late than never. Welcome to the legislative session. No, it was good. You know, every year it grows a little more, and frankly, it warms my heart to see that many people out there and supporting life.
It was awesome. It was the worst rain I've ever stood out, and I was completely soaked. Suit was soaked. Everything was soaked. And you know what? Not one of those folks out there budged. They were just standing there, and they were like, "We are going to stand here, even if it was a hurricane, to defend the unborn."
Well, they're vigilant. I mean, they're here every year, and frankly, they're coming to a place that is filled with a good number of people who support death, that want to see abortions being expanded and reproductive parity and more taxpayer dollars being used for abortion. And you know, these folks come out each and every year and stand strongly for life.
Yep, I love it. It was so encouraging. Also encouraging, tomorrow going to be voted out of the Judiciary Committee, finally, civil asset forfeiture reform. Been a long time coming. It's kind of a first step. It doesn't really solve all the problems, but it's a good first step to finally address what has become an issue most states have taken on across the country.
Oh, yeah. And they've all kind of handled it differently. And this is definitely a first step. I mean, the optimal solution to this is simply eliminate all civil asset forfeiture. But You know, like most things, it takes time to actually get people aware of the my words, heinous activity of governmental agencies in this state. And if we can do so by getting some reporting done, so people are aware of the amount of property that is stolen from citizens who are in most cases never convicted of anything and usually never charged with anything. It's a partial victory. So there's more work to do.
A lot more work to do, but you know, it's step by step. And speaking of that, I want to shift gears a little bit and go to remote testimony. I sat down with the chief clerk's office today. I'm meeting with them again tomorrow. Looks like we're going to have remote testimony by next session. A lot, and what does that mean for you in Eastern Washington? It means it'll at least give the opportunity for some people in Eastern Washington to testify remotely through the technology that we have and get their voices heard in Olympia instead of having to go over the pass.
Well, this is a long time coming. And we've said for a long time that, you know, we all represent those of us in Eastern Washington. And frankly, even over on the west side, we represent people who it's tough for them to come to Olympia on any given day. And sometimes it's because of the pass conditions. Other times it's because they have actual work to do. Or they have families, you know, whatever the case may be. And so it really is difficult for them to come over here. And I'm hopeful that this works extremely well for a couple of reasons. Number one, access to your government. That's always important. But even more than that is there's nothing more frustrating to people who put their lives on hold, take a day off from work, find childcare, make the 3 to 5 hour drive to Olympia, and then they're told you have 30 seconds.
Right.
So, you know, I'm hopeful that this will allow people a greater opportunity to actually hear, have their voice heard.
And the way that it looks like it's going to shape up is city halls in specific population areas of Eastern Washington, Yakima, Wenatchee, Tri-City, Spokane, maybe even Moses Lake will kind of be the center of where that remote testimony can happen.
Hey, it's a start.
It is.
We'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, why not? It's going to give people a larger voice. And speaking of that, so Saturday I'm up in Colville. I mentioned the Hearst decision. I mentioned the fix that you were the master of getting in and getting through. And everybody in the audience, cattle ranchers, farmers, housewives, car mechanics, everybody in the audience, to a person, erupted in applause. First of all, great job, Dave, on that. Secondly, what does the fix actually mean?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, I suppose. First, Matt, I really do appreciate that. But, you know, you're heard far and wide in Eastern Washington, and then you've got your podcast that go out. And I think it's important to note that we would not have received or reached an agreement to a Hearst fix if the Senate hadn't stood firmly for months and saying, we're not doing anything with the capital budget until we get a Hearst fix. And Senator Warnock out of Moses Lake stood firm and continued to work. I was brought in June and worked on it all interim and into the session. And then it's kind of at the last minute, there was a change of negotiators. And Senator Shelley Short, who's up in the 7th from Addie, she came in and provided a spark that was definitely needed. It changed the focus from, I guess what I'd say is it forced the Democrats in there to recognize that a one-size-fits-all approach is not going to work. And it's something we'd been saying for months, but it took Shelley coming in and saying that to actually get the point across. And then we also had Representative Vince Byes from Whatcom County in. And Whatcom County was the genesis for the Hearst decision, and having him there to bring that expert knowledge of Whatcom County and the impacts Hearst has had was invaluable. And so as a team, we were able to really push this thing over the finish line. So what's it mean? Well, I'll hit the highlights. So we've got language in the bill that essentially grandfather, it's a grandfather clause that says all wells in existence up to the date of a governor's signature.
So last, what, Friday?
Friday.
Yep.
Those are grandfathered. They're not regulated. So the bill itself is prospective only. It only deals with new domestic withdrawals. Now, why did I stress domestic? Because there are a number of uses under the law that are what are called permit-exempt uses, up to 5,000 gallons a day for industrial and commercial uses, 5,000 gallons a day for non-commercial gardens and greenhouses, and unlimited for stock water. And it was very important to all of the constituents that, we all represent to maintain the assurance that those permit-exempt uses remain in effect and focus this down to new residential withdrawals to limit the overall scope of the bill. We demanded early on, we needed statutory changes to four specific areas of law to overturn the Hearst decision. The building code section of, state law, subdivision section, the Planning Enabling Act, and, the Growth Management Act. We were able to get very good language in, all four of those sections to truly have the statutory fix necessary to overturn the decision. And then came all the stuff the Democrats wanted. And I think it's important to understand that there were, they had envisioned, and the governor's office had envisioned, a, top-down, heavy-handed approach to this that would all but assure limits in groundwater withdrawals. And so what we were able to do, and it's to be honest, it's not perfect, but we were able to take out of the 15 fish critical basins, seven of those are going to rely on all of the work done at the local level with watershed planning. They're relying on plans that, came that, were part of a law passed in 1998, you know, 20 years ago now, that nothing ever happened with. We the citizens spent hundreds of hours at the local level working to put together their vision of watershed management, addressing water quantity, addressing the in-stream flows, addressing the competing water uses and the projects necessary to, do those things. Then they just sat on a, on a shelf because in the mid-2000s, the legislature just decided to quit funding them. So we were able to put those back into the spotlight and say the work's done, let's implement those. And, seven basins, three of which are in eastern Washington, are now going to rely on those plans. And these are the plans that Senator Bob Morton and, former Representative Gary Chandler worked so hard to get in place through the passage of, House Bill 2514 20 years ago. The other eight basins are problematic. They didn't do all of the planning up front at the local level, and that's where the, more top-down process is going to be. I think we put in some pretty good protections in order to ensure that the local governments, the building industry, the, agricultural industry will have a voice at the table. But those are going to be the ones to watch to, see how this really works out and whether additional changes are, going to be needed in, the future.
So somebody wants to punch a well now, right? Let's say they're not in one of these three basins in eastern Washington. They want to punch a well. Describe kind of briefly the, process.
If you if you live in one of the basins that are not included in the fix, then you're good to go. And and I would note for clarity's sake here, the areas of, the Skagit, which is Wyrus 3 and 4, and the Yakima Basin are not specifically included in this. And we tried and over and over to get them included, and they're not. So those are the, exceptions to the this rule. But in all other areas of, Washington State, and specifically eastern Washington, with the exception of those three Wyras, it's business as usual. It's 5,000 gallons a day. Go and get your building permit. We've removed all uncertainty for the vast majority of eastern Washington. They can proceed with putting up a farm labor housing. They can proceed with another home on the property so the next generation of, farmers within that family can move back to the farm and begin taking over the operation. These the folks that have invested their life savings in retirement property can now move forward, or the small families that are just trying to get started that are don't want to live in that urban jungle. They want to live in rural areas. They can now do so. They can. We've removed the uncertainty. They can drill a well. They can get a building permit.
So, if they're not in one of those three basins, do you pay a fee, or can you just punch a well?
Punch a well. Well, there's an existing fee.
Yeah, there is an existing fee, but I'm talking nothing in addition to what that what's there now.
Nothing in addition.
Okay, and then if you are in those three basins, then you would have to pay an additional fee.
Yep.
To do that,
it's an additional fee. And that's pretty much it. I mean, it's get your building permit and go to work. The kind of the newest requirements are more on at the county level. It's more on the government itself, and unfortunately, I guess the only citizens that will be impacted are the ones that volunteered to serve on these planning units. But they're going to rely on those plans. They're going to look at whether those plans need to be updated, but otherwise, they're good to go.
And a lot of that fee money can go toward mitigation projects, all kinds of things like off-channel storage and other things that are really good for a lot of people, not just in Eastern, but in Western Washington as well.
Absolutely. You know, the irony of so much of this, Whatcom County is where the Hearst decision came from. And I've spent a lot of time in Whatcom County. Frankly, there's a lot of good duck hunting in Whatcom County, and therein lies the irony, because this is an area, a county that the lowlands flood, and yet they have a apparent water shortage. It makes no sense hydraulically, geographically, no sense at all. But you know, our state Supreme Court that loves to write laws from the bench decided that they have a water problem, even though the county and the ecology said they don't. The important thing is they have a process by which they can move forward. And, you know, as long as the county doesn't do something to step out of line, so to speak, they could, you know, Whatcom County's got a moratorium right now. They can lift the moratorium tomorrow and begin work.
Yep.
And so it's on the county government now to make the right decisions in the best interest of the citizens they serve.
All right. Well, we've got about 30 seconds left. If you could, real quick, plug your radio show.
It's Saturday mornings on 9:30 a.m. at 10:30 in the morning in Yakima, God, Family, and Country. Listen in. We're going to be talking this week with our wonderful guest, Representative Matt Shea, about horrible gun legislation.
Yes, indeed. And we've, again, that hearing is going to be Thursday for all those bad gun bills. Thursday, 1:30, House Hearing Room A, Judiciary in the House of Representatives. Make sure you get there way, way, way early. This is going to probably be one of the largest hearings of the year, if not the largest of the year. Well, Dave, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today, man. I appreciate you. Really, everything you're doing.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. May God bless all of you and keep vigilant. Please be eternally vigilant in the defense of freedom and liberty. We can't turn our backs for a single second. We can't give a single inch, especially on the gun legislation. Again, may God bless all of you. May he make this generation the greatest one.